Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Illuminated. We've got the Tarkir Dragonstorm Crash Course. My name is Ben Warney. Joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Focus the Mind Sachs. Ethan, we got to get dialed in. Our listeners got to get dialed in. Information is about to be poured out into their ear holes.
And in an all-new, never-before-seen way here on Lords of Limited. It's the crash course, but not, this ain't your daddy's crash course or whatever you're supposed to say. We got a full revamp, a full gut and rebuild of the crash course here this week.
Yeah, I think as a result of a lot of reflection on our part on Lords Unlimited, we got on a call with Josh Lee Kwai. We are reflected out, and I think all of the changes that we wanted to make are jam-packed in this episode, and I'm excited to get to them.
So let's give an overview of Crash Course. If you've never joined us for new set season, welcome. And if you've joined us before, welcome, because we've got something new for you. We're sort of taking another spin, another draft, another iteration of the Crash Course here, and really dialing in on getting some takeaways for our listeners. And as a result, really forcing ourselves to make some statements and predictions about what we think the format is going to be, and sort of moving away from the statsy nature of previous crash courses and just giving you more actionable advice that we think is going to be in play in your first drafts of the format next week.
Yeah, I've got the format solved. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do too. I hope that you have the same bullet points as I do written down. That's the other exciting thing about this, is that usually the crash course is an extremely collaborative process for the two of us. Like, yeah, we grade separately and we have different cards and stuff, but we really know the game plan going in terms of these are the cards we're going to argue about. And spoiler alert, we're not going to be doing much of that card arguing. There will be some championing and we'll certainly have differences in our lists, but we're not really going to be focusing on those card differences. We're really going to be trying to focus on the cards and the things we expect to matter in this format. And then I'm sure we'll come back next week and have to say that green is great or whatever. You know, what thing are we going to get wrong this time around? But so let's do a little housekeeping and then we will dive into the new and improved crash course here for Tarkir Dragonstorm. First things first, let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. We've got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page. We've got access to our Lords of Limited Discord. I did a practice draft for Tarkir Dragonstorm yesterday with some
Discord.
You know, practice drafts are, that's the juice that really like gives you a full sense of how your card evaluations are obviously right. Cause then you take those cards that you think are good and then they
I
make
don't
your
like
deck.
What's happening here. And you look at your deck. I was actually right. And you're dripping with sarcasm now. I love a good pre-format practice draft.
That's why I did it. And it's awesome to see those firing in Lords Limited Discord. Awesome to see lots of folks actually planning to do some drafts before Spotlight Series Denver on that Friday before diving in to hopefully make some PT spots in that tournament series there. And of course, we also want to shout out at a higher tier. You get access to our podcast feed, which gives you this episode a day early ad free. And it also gives you access to our bonus mini episode of Lords Unlimited. This week, we'll be looking at some niche or maybe tricky rares to evaluate. A lot of the rares I found were pretty straightforward, pretty look pretty balmy. But then a lot of rares that I was like, does this work? Is this good? Is this worth it? So we'll be chatting about that a little later today, and that'll be in our patrons podcast feed later on this week. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, see what might work for you if you're interested in giving back to the show and getting some perks. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Flame Rush Rider, MJ, David, Lionel, and Carson. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Wow, Michael Jordan supporting our podcast? You'll love to see it.
Yeah, you'd love to see it. The GOAT, number 23, sports. Whoa, okay, Ben.
Whoa. LeBron James is the GOAT. Thank you.
I can't do this. Maybe we'll do this on Lords Unlimited, but we can't do it here. So the first thing, and Ben sort of put together this rough outline for us. The first thing we want to do is sort of some opening arguments.
Send all the messaging my way.
That's right. We're going to do some sort of opening arguments here. We each have been tasked to come to this episode with five format truths, things we expect to be true about this format going in. Do you want to do your full list so I can get the full scope, or do you want to volley back and forth? What do you want to do here?
I think we should do each person's list in total and just discuss the points as they go. So I'll kick things off here. My first format truth is a good one, I think, obviously. I mean, they're format truths. The cycle of devotees points you towards which clan each color is best in. So I think the colors in the format each have a primary, a secondary, and a tertiary clan that they're like, as far as this color fits best in this clan, second best in this clan, third best in this clan. So if we take a look at white as an example, that's where the Mardu devotee lives. I think white is really good at attacking, really wants to attack. And I think so, therefore, Mardu is its primary. I think Abzan is the next clan that's best at attacking, so that's going to be its secondary. And then if you start heavy white, I think it's going to be pretty unlikely for you to end up in Jeskai, which is, I think, is white's tertiary color. So I think if you use those devotees as, if I'm Mardu, I really want to be heavy white because that's where the Mardu devotee lives, I think that's going to set you up for some initial success in the format. But I also think that could change depending on how you like to draft the decks. So for example, red is the Jeskai devotee, but I don't really think Jeskai is base red. I think it is if you follow WotC's signposts, which is like Jeskai is flurrying, double spelling, aggro. I'm less confident that that's going to come together, but I do really like a Jeskai control life. So I'm a little skeptical about my theory as it relates to Jeskai based on how I want to draft the deck versus what WotC is saying.
Don't worry, I've got you covered. I have a full bullet point devoted to Jeskai.
Oh, well, good. So I don't know that I have a full bullet point, but I am jazzed about Jeskai. I don't know if you are or not. But so I think going into the format, like three color format can be a lot. And I think using those devotees as signposts for, if I'm Abzan, I want to get deep into black. That's where the Abzan devotee lives. I think that can be a good way to frame the format for yourself early on.
Yeah, I like that. I hadn't considered that, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
Number two, drafting decks from one color out towards two or three colors is going to result in a much better deck than starting three colors and drilling down towards a base color. So I really want to encourage folks to do that. But going back to the first point, if you do happen to start Abzan, like with a great three color gold card, you want to know how to quickly narrow that down into picking a good base color, right? So for example, if you have to start Jeskai, I think, and you drill down towards white as your base color, I think you could be in a fair amount of trouble there, unless you're really going to build Jeskai aggro. But regardless of how you're framing this point for yourself, I think inside one color, out towards three colors is much easier to do than three into one, because I think depending on what you choose to do, you can accidentally get yourself in trouble if you don't have a very good macro picture of what's going on in the format for each of the clans.
I totally agree, and I'm going to break the rules here because I have a point about colors and color pairs and drafting this format that is on my format truth list that I feel like dovetails nicely here that I think I'm just going to bring up, which is this is primarily a two enemy color with a splash format with some room for true four to five color shenanigans. But I think those are two separate styles of decks. And so I think just agreeing with you in terms of encouraging folks to think of what is the core of the deck, and then how do you go from color to enemy color pair to clan versus taking a clan card first and holding on?
Well, but sometimes you're going to need to, because as we saw in the rares, lots of the rares are insanely good. So I think there are going to be a lot of drafts where you start with some busted, you know, Jeskai rare, and you're going to have to figure out how you want to dial that down into a Jeskai deck with a good mana base. So I don't think it's always, you're not always going to be able to go inside out. Sometimes you are going to have to go outside in, and knowing how to do that correctly or have a plan for how to do that, I think it's going to be really important. With your point about enemy color pairs, I feel like the enemy color pairs also go into one clan better than the other. How do you feel about that?
I don't agree with that. Maybe they do, but not markedly so. I know we're big fans of blue-green. I think blue-green goes nicely into either Sultai or Temur.
I think that's the only one that really does that. And not necessarily that that's true, but depending on which enemy color pair you are heavier in, like which color you're heavier in the enemy color pair, like if you're black-white and you've got a lot of great black uncommons, you're going to be way better at going into Abzan than if you're black-white and you've got a lot of great white uncommons. I think you're going to be way better at going into Mardu. Like, so you also have to pay attention, like, even within the enemy color pairs, there's some tension about where you're, not necessarily tension, but cards that push you more likely to splash a certain clan than another clan.
Sure. I think I agree with you, but probably not to the extremity that you're maybe framing this.
Okay. Number three, commons are back to mattering again and are pushed in power level compared to the single color uncommons.
I co-sign this.
So I've got two cards here as an example. So this is my top common for green, Anok Wayfarer. One in a green for a 1/1 dog scout. When it enters, mill three cards. You can put a land card from among them into your hand. If you don't, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. Versus my top green uncommon, Traveling Botanist. One in a green for a 2/3. When it becomes tapped, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you can reveal it and put it into your hand. If you don't put the card in your hand, you may put it into your graveyard. Like, those are very close in power level, and I think you can make a case that the common is better, that Anok Wayfarer is better than Traveling Botanist.
Because of the mill three?
Because of the mill three, yeah. And the option to have a +1/+1 counter, which then can go into your Abzan right. Counters Matter synergies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I buy that for sure. I agree. I was the list of notable commons was hard to whittle down to 10 for me, and so I didn't. I know if I didn't, then you definitely didn't keep a list of 10.
I did not.
And the uncommons are good, but not busto.
I agree, especially the single colored ones. The gold yes. ones, there's some real bangers in the gold cards, which is what you would expect from a three-color
right,
format.
Right, for sure.
But I like that the commons are pushed to help compete with, like, I don't think you're going to have to play three colors, which dovetails back to your point of, like, two colors plus a splash. I think you're going to be able to get power without being full-on three-color monstrosity.
I agree.
All right, number four, making sure you can cast cards on time is going to be a big deal. So I think there's a lot that I see from the format. One is that white, you know, you were asking, is white busted or whatever last week? I do think white, now that I've seen the whole picture of the format, I feel like I can answer this question. White looks consistent and aggressive to me. So I think there's going to be decks that can pressure you and smack you around if you're like derping around with your mana base. And I also think the power level overall for the format is really high. So if one person stumbles and the other person doesn't, it's going to be extra punishing because of how powerful the cards are that the one person who hasn't stumbled is going to be casting. So I think you need to do work in the course of the draft, in the course of your deck building, to make sure that you have a good mana base that is going to, more often than not, be able to cast your cards on time.
Yes. It's so funny. We're also tasked to have some takeaways, and a lot of your points, two of your points so far, are two of my three takeaways for the end of the episode.
Okay, great. Love it.
We'll have some good reiteration there.
And my last format truth is having a macro understanding of how the format works is really important to put cards in their proper home and navigate drafts well. So as an example here, the card, a black uncommon, Yathan Tomb Guard, two and a black for a 2/3 uncommon with menace. Whenever a creature you control with a counter on it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card and lose one life. Like, that's a good card. But it doesn't go in every black deck well. I think its best home, presumably, is probably going to be Abzan, I think.
Yeah.
Where you're doing the Endure stuff and can stack up counters that are then going to be able to attack quickly. I think that's the easiest, most efficient way to get counters in the format. So this is going to be its best home. And then secondarily, like Sultai stuff with the renew counters, but less good there because I think that's more geared towards a late game and this is an aggressive card. And then lastly, I think Mardu probably, unless you happen to have some counter sub synergies in Mardu, or maybe you've also got some Endure cards in your Mardu deck. But regardless, I think you want to pair Yathan Tombguard with the Endure mechanic, like as much as possible. It's easy to just say, well, that's a good card, draft it, and then start drafting something and not really know how to maximize it. So yes, we're championing Inside Out, but Yathan Tombguard's not a broadly good cards. Like, so taking notes of which cards from colors are broad versus specific also in your quest to build decks Inside Out.
Yeah. Well, I love all of your points. And I think in Classic, what we both bring to the podcast, your format truths are much broader and mine are a little more narrow and specific because that's what I do. I just dial in.
Well, I made a conscious effort also to make them not hot takey. Because I wanted it to be actionable, and I'm assuming yours are actionable also, but I'll save the hot take stuff for more into the format. One of the truths to be broad.
Yeah, my truths are more about my expectations of how things are going to perform. So I guess they're hot takey in that sense. So I have my first point of this is primarily a two enemy color with a splash format with some room for true 4 to 5 color shenanigans. And I do think 4 to 5 color decks are going to be real. I think they're definitely a part of the format, much like they often are in any set. Like, they're not going to be as good as the decks that are when you find a really good open 2 color pair and you're just in that. It's not going to be as good as 4 to 5 colors, but the tools are there and the payoffs are there for sure.
And you're going to have to be base green to do that, I think.
Yeah, largely. I think so. Okay, I guess first hot take. I think Abzan is the clan to be with black,
ooh,
white. I think black, white, and black, green are the best in terms of power and flexibility of the enemy color pairs. I also think these are the three colors whose commons I like the most, black, white, and green.
There's so much going on in that format truth. I love it. I don't think I agree completely, but I do agree with portions of it. Like, for example, this is going to get into color discussions, which we'll get into later, but I agree. I like a lot of what black, white, and green are bringing to the table. I do think there's some tension specifically in black, green, as far as like how aggressive you can be or how aggressive you should be. Like, I'm a little worried that can get caught in the middle and then just lose to decks that are going bigger. But I do love black white, specifically heavy white, as a really nice starting off place for stuff.
For sure. On the flip side, I think red is the color I currently want to avoid if possible, certainly as a base, which I think makes Jeskai the least desirable clan, with an asterisk, which is that I'm already looking ahead. I think Jeskai will have more success as a controlling shell.
Yes.
And I think Jeskai is, and there may be more decks like this, I think Jeskai is going to break the mold of enemy color pairs. And I think blue-white with a red splash is how you're going to win with Jeskai.
Woo, you stole my point. Ah, man, that's so cool that we see the same Jeskai deck, though.
Yeah.
Because I definitely see the Jeskai deck that you're talking about there. Like, it's a draw go, like, true yes. control. Like, it's Jeskai control. Like, you would draft in Vintage Cube or whatever.
And you're going to get to double spell, but it just may not be on your turn. It may be on your opponent's turn.
Correct. Yeah. And not that you necessarily, and I don't even think you should try to double spell necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just going to happen some amount of the time. But if you just play the great control cards in the Jeskai colors, I think you're going to end up with a good deck. And that's kind of what I was talking about where, like, I didn't like Jeskai aggro. I do really like Jeskai control. And
I
definitely agree that red's tough. Like, it's got some good cards, but they're all very specific. Like, red doesn't have many broadly good cards.
Correct. My last point here, just because I don't want us to get, we're going to get to color identities and things we think colors, what the colors are doing in a second. So I feel like we don't need to dial in on red right now. My last point on my list is that I believe hybrid uncommons and Storm Broods have sort of, I think, sneaky power as flexible early picks to let you wait to settle into a color pair and clan. I think the hybrid uncommon specifically, Storm Broods, I think, are easier to see. And the Storm Broods are a cycle of their split cards as omens, dragons on one half, and a spell of the enemy color on the other half. But more specifically, I think the hybrid uncommons, really focusing in on looking at them, something like an example card is Defibrillating Current, which is the Mardu uncommon spell. It's 2/red, white, and black as a deal 4 to a creature or planeswalker, and you gain 2. And when you start to just look at that as this can be a Mardu card, but more so, I'm just looking at all of those as what if it costs 2 red, white, 2 white, black, or I guess 2 red, black, if you end up in some weird red, black as your allied color pair deck. But that goes in Mardu or base white, black for Abzan or base white, red for Jeskai. And that really means that's going in 60% of your decks. And so I think that as that may not be in pack 3, a powerful card for you, but early in the draft, I think those cards are really good in terms of letting you delay the decision, because I do believe that you are going to get paid off for delaying the decision and getting deep into doing that inside out thing Ben said. You're going to get paid off when you find what's open and all of those 3-color cards get opened in pack 3 and no one else can take them but you.
Probably. There also should be at least 1 4- to 5- color drafter per pod. Like, there's going to be...
Sure.
An ideal pod, assuming the format is remotely close to balanced, there'll be a drafter of each clan.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be a 4 to 5 color drafter. And then two people doubling up on clans, or one person mm-hmm. doubling up on soup or whatever. But yeah, right. I definitely agree that you want to stay open as you're navigating the drafts.
And I think those two slots specifically, the hybrid uncommons and the Storm Broods, I think early in the draft, they're really high up in my pick order.
I agree. But also in the sense that having those high, you also have a plan, right, for that, like how you want to navigate drafts, how you want to stay open. And I think if you come to your first draft in this format and you're like, 5-color clan format, I'll pick a clan, I'll draft it. Like, I think you're going to have way less success than somebody who's thought about the types of things we're talking about here and having a plan for how you want to delay the decision, how you want to start in a certain color or enemy color pair to get yourself into 2 of the guilds that you want to draft or clans that you want to draft most, that sort of thing. Like, macro level thinking about how you want to navigate the format, I think, is going to be really key early on.
Amen.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We may not be talking about stats in this crash course, but that doesn't mean we can't talk numbers. Traditional in-person therapy can cost anywhere from $100 to $250 per session, which adds up fast. But with BetterHelp online therapy, you can save on average up to 50% per session.
With BetterHelp, you pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, saving you big on cost, like when the stonks are up in the arena store and there's a draft token on sale. Such value.
Therapy should feel accessible, not like a luxury. With online therapy, you get quality care at a price that can make sense and can help you with anything from anxiety to everyday stress.
It's also nice to have a confidant to talk to, bounce ideas off of, and problem solve with. Your mental health is worth it, and now it's within reach.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people globally.
It's convenient, too. You can join a session with the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life.
Your well-being is worth it. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. All right, so that's going to bring us into talking about the colors, and we're going to split this up. We each have sort of a statement about what we think the color identity is, what we can expect from the color, and then we'll take a look at what our top uncommons of that color are and which commons of that color made our notable commons list.
All right, I'll kick things off with white. I already alluded to this a little bit, but I think white, specifically at common, but also at uncommon, as a general thing, if you are base white, you're going to be aggressive. Whether that's in a Mardu shell, whether that's in an Abzan shell, like if you're heavy white, you're going to be aggressive. With the exception of, I think, Ossius Exhale, the whole cycle of Exhale is just absurd, but the white Exhale is also very good. It's 1 and a white, deal 5 to an attacking or blocking creature. If you behold a dragon, you gain 2 life. That card is very strong, and I think the Jeskai control deck you alluded to, that's going to be that card's best home. And presumably, hopefully, you'll be able to get that late there. But other than that, like, white's cards are all pointing you towards attacking, whether that is through the endure mechanic or whether that's through mobilize and going, but both of them want to go wide and both of them want to attack. And I think if white is your base color, you really want to be Mardu or Abzan, not Jeskai. Well, mostly because I don't believe in base red, white, Jeskai aggro. Like, I just don't believe in that. That's power level, or that that's actually going to work out. If that does, then you're welcome to be Jeskai if you're base white.
I have a very similar point. I said it really wants to play to the board and be aggressive with good overlap from mobilize and endure to support a go wide theme with another, the asterisk of there are the tools for white to be controlling as well. And I wonder if that's not a key for Jeskai's success.
Yeah, this is exciting that we made separate lists and are coming to a lot of the same conclusions. So we'll either be really right or really wrong together.
Yeah,
love it.
For sure. The Lords of Limited feedback loop. my top uncommons for white. Number one, I have Loxodon Battle Priest. It's 4 and a white for a 3/5. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature you control. You gave eyes just now. What were the eyes about?
It's not on my list.
Hmm.
It was a hard card for me to evaluate. Ultimately, I came down on this is it's too late in the game for those +1/+1 counters at the beginning of combat to matter.
I don't agree. I think this card is going to be a massive problem and impacts the board the turn it comes into play and continues to do so if left unanswered. My second uncommon is Static Snare, 4 and a white, flash enchantment, costs 1 less to cast for each attacking creature, and when it enters, exile target artifact or creature an opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield.
Yeah, that card is excellent, right? Because it plays well on offense and defense. Like, you're going to get the cost reduction when you're the one attacking, and you're also going to get the cost reduction when your opponent is the one attacking.
Right. It's awkward if I don't know how like board stalls are going to work, but it was easy for me to when I thought about it in comparison to Witchstalker's Frenzy from Wilds of Eldraine, which was a 3 and a red, deal 5, and it costs 1 less to cast for each creature that attacked this turn. And once I thought about it like that, I was like, oh yeah, that card was busted and such a huge tempo swing and always got the thing you wanted. So I think Static Snare is excellent. And then I had a choice between a couple of what I perceived as really strong white 2-drops at uncommon. I went with Sun Pearl Kieran. It's 1 and a white for a 2/1 with flash and flying. When it enters, return up to one other target non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand. And if it was a token, you draw a card.
Yeah, so Static Snare and Sun Pearl Kieran both made my list. I'm curious what the other white 2-drop that you liked was.
The 1 and a white 3/1 that whenever creature you cast
from your graveyard.
Well, not cast, but I think you return it to your hand for 1 and a white when a thing you control dies. I just thought that's so annoying to deal with. And you can.
Right. Cause you can't take 3 over and over. Like, you got to trade with it, but then it's going to like keep coming after you.
And the mobilized tokens really play nicely with that. I just thought that card was awesome. And it was hard for me to pick between those two for my list.
Yeah. White is really deep at both common and uncommon.
That's the thing and a lot of these lists, to dovetail one of your format truths points, some of these lists, maybe not for white, but for black, I like a lot of its commons. And then when I got to the top uncommons list, I was like, I like some of these cards, but honestly, I feel like I like more of the commons than I do the uncommons.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you about black. But I think for white as a color, in terms of like, if you want to draft this, I think it's a pretty safe bet. Like, it looks really deep. And it looks like all its cards point you in the same direction, which is play the board and attack. So, like, if you're unsure or you don't have a great plan going into the format, I think white could be a very good handhold through your first drafts.
For sure.
The only uncommon I have that didn't make your list is my number 2 uncommon, which is Teeming Dragonstorm. 3 and a white for an enchantment. When it enters, create 2/2/2 white soldier creature tokens. And when a dragon enters, you return that enchantment to its owner's hand.
Yeah, I really like that card, too. I like that does both, right? Or maybe triples. It can go in assertive decks. It's really nice in a defensive Jeskai deck, especially if you can pick it up with a dragon. And it's not too bad for the 5-color dragon soup decks that I think are going to exist.
Right. It's just a great card. And all you have to do is pick it up once. Like, if you pick it up once, it's a house of a card. You've made 4 2/2s over the course of one card. Like, that's ridiculous. And the other thing I assume you tried to do also, well, that's not true. I generally, when possible, tried to pick cards that were generically good with the thought of, okay, I want to be going inside out, like to have cards that were as flexible as possible so that I could feel like I could navigate anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which white commons made your list of notable commons?
Starting out with a banger here. Erishin Sunshield, 3 and a white for 3/4. When it enters, exile up to 2 target cards from a single graveyard. You can pay white to tap it to tap target creature.
So you're going to get a chance to champion this card because this did not make my list. And I initially wrote this card off. I think it will be a pretty easy sell from you to me, but I want to give you the floor here.
I think this card, it does everything. Do you remember how good that stupid black card was in Midnight Hunt? The zombie format with decayed zombies. There was the 3, it cost 5 mana, it was a 3/4.
And Grave Titan.
Yeah, Grave Titan. It brought 2 decayed zombies along with it. I think this is a very similar version of that card for this format. So I think your white decks are going to want to be aggressive. And then this is going to come down at the point in your curve in those white decks where those graveyardy decks, the Sultai decks, the Temur decks are going to have done some work to like put some things in the graveyard. They're going to have self-milled. They're going to be thinking, okay, I'm going to stabilize by like playing this creature and then casting this harmonized spell on the cheap. And you're going to be able to play this and nab the 2 cards out of their graveyard that matter, have destroyed all of the work that they've done trying to get their synergies going. And you're going to be able to slam the door shut by paying single white to tap a creature is cheap on this big of a body for 4 mana. Like the card stands on its own just as 4 mana, 3/4, exile 2 things from a graveyard, I think. And then adding single white tap to tap something is going to let you, it's just going to let you get through the last points of damage that you need. And it's going to be, I think, extraordinarily busted in multiples.
I liked this card a lot more once I started to picture this white control deck that I think exists. Because I think I like it a lot more there, just like a 3/4 body that disrupts your opponent's late game as a tapper or just a good body. I like it less in Mardu Beats. And if my Abzan deck is more aggressively slanted, but if what you're saying is true, if like, you know, eating part of your opponent's graveyard for their harmonize or their renew spells is as backbreaking as it felt when your stuff got exiled with Flashback or Disturb in Midnight Hunt, then I totally see it.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing for this card. That's why it's on my notable commons list. And I also, again, I was not thinking of that, but I do think it plays very well in a Jeskai control shell. Actually, I don't know. Because I really want that deck to operate at instant speed, but maybe.
Yeah, I think you'd be happy running it. Okay, what else?
Ossius Exhale, the 1 and a white for an instant. Beholder Dragon deals 5 to an attacker or blocker. All the Exhales are going to be on both of our lists. That's partially why it was so hard to narrow down the list, because we just got a cycle of commons that were like almost auto includes.
Yeah, I was a little more judicious. I did not include that either, but I like that card a lot too.
Yeah, card is excellent, and I think going to be excellent if you're controlling in white. Going to be less good if you're aggressive, but still playable. Also have Stormplane Detainment, 2 and a white for the enchantment. That's the O-ring effect. When it enters, exile a non-land permanent opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield.
Nice. I have Stormplane Detainment on mine, and the other white card, I assume you're done with yours?
I'm done with my whites, yes.
I have Salt Road Pack Beast on mine as well. The 5 and a white, 4/3, costs 1 less to cast for each creature you control, and when this enters, draw a card.
I think you're too high on that card.
I think that is going to be a bad aged take on
your part. Gloves are coming off. I love it. So here's my pitch. I see white going wide, like, and I see draws where Salt Road Pack Beast is broken, but I don't think you need the Salt Road Pack Beast to be good. Like, I saw your grade for it. You have a graded what? Is it B minus? Like pulling you into white, like probably one of white's best commons. It feels tough for me to pick that as white's best common because you got to get all the other stuff first. Like not everybody's going to be able to use Salt Road Pack Beast. And maybe this is a difference in power level of how it's going to play out versus, you know, we talk about sometimes where we pick it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think you're going to have to, grading it as a B minus says, I'm going to pick this highly and it's going to pull it into white to me. And I think if you just draft a good white deck, you'll get some Salt Road Pack Beasts and maybe you'll play them, maybe you won't. But I think the draws where you go like 2-drop, 3-drop and your opponent kills your stuff and then you have Salt Road Pack Beast rotting in your hand, that's really bad. And on your best draws, I don't think you need Salt Road Pack Beast to win the game. Like you're just going to curve out and beat down.
I think you're just thinking in too much of extremes. You're thinking of like the two poles of it, whereas like your opponent destroys your board and you've got the six drop that isn't a bomb rotting in your hand, or the flip side where you do go two drop, three drop, and your opponent doesn't disrupt you at all and you're winning the game anyway. There's a lot of games in the middle there, in between those, where four mana, and just like you're discounting the times where like board stalls can happen, and this just coming down and letting you double spell as a cantripping 4/3. I think this card is going to be excellent. I don't think this is as narrow as you're painting the picture.
That's fair. It's hard for me to see, but I we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah. Let's move on to blue. My take for blue is that I think it looks like a good support / control color. It has tools for tempo and aggro in the disruption department, but I think it will need help from other colors to beat down to take advantage of that tempo, if that's the case. With an asterisk on a card that we talked about last week, Snowmelt Stag could be also a key. I think Snowmelt Stag is going to be excellent if you're on any kind of defensive side. That's the 4-mana 2/5 that has vigilance. It is a 5/2 on your turn, and you can pay a chunk of mana to make it unblockable on your turn. I think Snowmelt Stag could also be a key for blue aggro as well, since it hits so hard. So that's like an exception to my statement of I don't think blue has a lot of creatures that take advantage of tempo aggro. But there, blue feels a little shallow to me. There's like some cards at the top of commons and uncommons that I'm really excited about, and then it falls off pretty drastically after that.
I think we're seeing blue a little differently. So I'm going to tell you what I think about blue, and then maybe we can chat and come to a consensus. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I see when I look at blue is it gets the Holy Trinity of commons. It gets a good counterspell in Dispelling Exhale, which is... Mm-hmm. One in a blue for, which I might as well, like, these are dovetailing into my top common. So,
yeah.
One in a blue for an instant. You can Behold a Dragon. It's a 2-mana counter spell. They have to pay 2 if you don't Behold a Dragon. If you do Behold a Dragon, they have to pay 4. So you get that. Gets good instant speed card draw in Focus the Mind, which is 4 in a blue for an instant that costs 2 less to cast if you've cast another spell this turn. Draw 3 cards, then discard a card. And I think the turns where you can double spell with Focus the Mind on your opponent's turn are just going to be ridiculous. Like if you can get to 5 mana, counter something, and then cast this for 3 mana, like it's lights out. That's game over if you can get to that point. And then you also get the Tobo, the top or bottom spell at instant speed in Riverwalk Technique, which is 3 in a blue for an instant. Choose one. The owner of target non-land permanent puts it on the top or bottom of their library, which also has the bonus of being able to counter non-creature spells. I think those three cards at common, like if you can get a blue deck that wants to play that shell, that's what blue wants to do. Like, to me, that's what I see. And I think that's going to be at its best home in the Jeskai control deck that we were talking about. So I see blue as a really good base color for an control. Instant speed Drago style deck, much more than I see the Tempo Life. But I can also picture like a blue-white allied, like maybe blue-white can be like as a base color, maybe it can be control. Or it could be blue white tempo, like if you've got the white aggro cards there.
And does this Drago Life fit into like the worry I have about the Drago Life is I see it as base blue, but then pairing it with green for are you pairing it with green ever in that way?
I don't think so.
So then so narrow, right? Then it's really only, I guess it's blue red as your base for Teemer or blue red as your base for Jeskai.
Base for Jeskai. Yeah. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think like if you're, that's what I meant when I said the colors all have like a place where they want to go. So I think like blue really wants to pair with red, which really wants to go into Jeskai. Whereas if you're green, you can pair it with blue and go down the either Sultai or green is the most versatile color in the format by far, by leaps and bounds. But so a couple other thoughts about blue at to your point, it really wants to be Teemer or Jeskai more than it does Sultai. Like I think blue can be your base at its best if you're Jeskai, next at Teemer, like if you do the blue red, splash some green cards, but the base, it's just going to be so easy to be base green if you're Teemer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I don't think that's that likely to happen. But I do agree that Blue really wants to play a support role in Sultai. Like, if you're Sultai, uh-huh. because Sultai is so focused on counters that you almost have to be black-green mid-rangey. And then I picture those decks as just black-green with a touch of blue mm-hmm. for the gold cards.
Yeah, yeah, I buy that. I mean, it's probably black-green touching blue and white, to be honest.
Yeah, and then my last thought is kind of what we've already talked about, that it really wants to play a control game at instant speed.
I like that. Okay. What are your top uncommons?
Number one is Constrictor Sage, which is 4 and a blue for a 4/4. When it enters, tap target creature an opponent controls and put a stun counter on it. And it's got renew for 2 and a blue to exile this card from your graveyard. Tap target creature an opponent controls and put a stun counter on it. Activate only as a sorcery.
Yeah, that card's busted. That is also my top blue uncommon.
Yeah, that looks as good as in this format as Spikeshell Harrier was in. Like, they're very comparable cards.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I've got Spectral Denial, which is blue X for an instant. Costs one less to cast for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. Counter target spell unless its controller pays X.
Yes, just I also
huge,
like that card.
Huge tempo blowout. If you're ahead, you can't possibly lose. Like, it's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, it was tough to pick for a last spot because there are a lot of blue uncommons that I like. I ended up settling on Essence Anchor, which is 2 and a blue for the artifact. Beginning of your upkeep, surveil 1. You can tap it to create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Activate only during your turn and only if a card left your graveyard this turn.
Yeah, we have the same three cards. I have Sage number one. I have the Anchor. Your number three is my number two. And then the Counterspell at number three. I kind of want to push back a little bit because you were like, you just said I like a lot of blue's uncommons. It was hard mm-hmm. to pick. It was hard for me to pick because I don't like a lot of blue's uncommons.
There's some cards I really like that I left off. I really like Fresh Start. 1 and a blue for Flash Aura. Enchant creature. Enchant creature gets 5/-5/-0 and loses all abilities. I think that's going to play great in that blue control deck. I really like Yureni's Rebuff. 1 and a blue for a sorcery, bounce a creature, and then you can harmonize for 5 and a blue to bounce something. That's a really cool card.
But these aren't cards you like better than blue's commons, right? Like, the blue's commons that made your notable commons list are better than the cards you just read. I think that's not a good look for a color.
But I think that's true for a lot of colors. Like, the commons are pushed.
The commons are pushed. Okay, maybe that's fair. Maybe that's a hang up I have. like, did we get to all of the blue commons that you had on your notable list?
Well, one more uncommon shout. I really also like Bewildering Blizzard. Like, I think blue's got a lot of redundancy of effects to play this instant speed draw go thing, which is so Bewildering Blizzard is the 4 blue-blue instant draw 3 cards. Creatures your opponents control get -3/-0 until end of turn.
Yeah, draw 3 cards plus fog is a pretty good card.
Yeah. We did not get to all of my blue cards because what I presume is the best blue common is Sibsig Appraiser. It's 2 and a blue for a 2/1. Enters, look at the top 2 cards of your library, put one of them in your hand and the other into your graveyard.
Yeah, that is also my pick for top blue common. It's sort of Organ Hoarder at home, but still anything that makes you think of Organ Hoarder is going to be good. We have a chance for me to champion a card here. Potentially, because I have a blue common on my list that is not on your list and that I believe you dislike quite a bit, which is Ice Ridge Serpent. This is 4 and a blue for a 3/3. When it enters, return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. I think in the world of tokens, Endure tokens, in the world of Renew +1/+1 counters, and other work that people are going to be doing on their creatures to go tall, that a creature like this, a 5-mana 3/3 mana war, is going to be impactful. I know it doesn't play at instant speed. I know that's why it's not on your list, but I don't think that means that then this card doesn't matter.
I agree, and I hear what you're saying, except like that card is going to be as good as blue is at being aggressive. I don't think so.
I think much like Spikeshell Harrier gave you some breathing room. Like, yeah, I know this isn't a 4/4. I know that we're not dealing with max speed, but like, here's something that someone in our Discord pointed out to me from last week, which is that we were talking about Ringing Strike Mastery, the single blue, whatever, enchantment removal spell. It taps a thing, keeps it tapped, and then someone can pay 5 to untap it. And I was all focused on this card is like only good as blue tempo decks are going to be. And someone was like, nah, single, like, if you're a control deck, you want this because this just like lets you not die in the first few turns. And then you don't like, sure, eventually is your opponent really going to want to spend 5 mana to untap their 2 or 3 drop repeatedly? No, but this just like lets you buy time. And I think this does too. Like, I don't think this needs to be tempo aggro. I think this buys you time. I think this catches you up.
That's fair. Like, I hear that also, but I would rather counter my opponent's endure thing rather than just bounce the token or whatever. And I know that, like, games don't always work out perfectly like that, etc. Like, I'm not being naive about it. I'm not trying to be difficult. I think that card's going to be as good as blue wants to play to the board. Like, so if you have a deck where, like, blue wants to play to the board, sure, yes, sign me up. But it's, and so if blue white, like, tempo beatdown as a deck, that's going to be outstanding there. But I think the links, and maybe this is like putting a grade on it in terms of power level versus where you're going to pick it. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that card being a high pick for you.
Yeah, that I can get behind. That I can get behind. Like, so maybe that sense, it's not a notable common.
That's what I think. Like, is it going to be a good card when you cast it? Yes. I just don't see it as being, like, if you're talking about a pick order for blues commons, I don't see it being high in that pick order for blues commons.
Okay. I can wrap my head around it. What's your take on black?
Black. Oof. Okay. I've got a lot of thoughts about black. I think its commons are pretty mid-rangey, with some good removal. And I think it can complement white well in Mardu. But I think you really want to be base white if you're Mardu. And I think it really, if you're heavy black, I think you really want to be Obzon as a base color, because it's uncommons. And I agree, not a lot to choose from. But the ones that you do kind of have to choose, I think, because there are not some strong ones, they really point you towards Obzon and having counter synergy.
Yeah. My take for black is it checks a ton of boxes. It's got nothing outstanding, nothing like knocking on A range, but it is deep with lots of B grade cards, lots of high C's, and very few cards I would consider D's. It plays nicely with itself, in like it's got good inherent synergy, and then it also has good synergy in the intersection of mobilize and endure, with the bonus of having sacrifice synergies to take advantage of the tokens from both of those mechanics.
I agree that it fits well in the middle of those two. I think it wants to be more Obzon mid-range than it does white. Here's a better way to say it. I think if you're heavy black, you're going to be doing counter stuff more than you are mobilized stuff.
Well, but Endure doesn't have to be counters. Like, yes, you can have synergy with counters, but Endure gives you the option. And so you might end up being, like, there is black-white stuff that, like, one of black-white's signposts is a sacrifice outlet.
Sure, yeah.
So then you are going to be, and I think that is going to play more as a base black into black-white deck that can then be, yeah, maybe you're touching green, maybe you're touching red, but you just care about tokens in that respect.
Yeah, I think I see that card. I know the card you're talking about. I see that as a white card that you're then pairing black with white for.
Oh, interesting. I think that's a black card in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where maybe the differences are coming in.
I think black looks great to me. And I could have put half a dozen black cards on my notable commons list.
Wow. I do not have that many. First up, I've got Caustic Exhale. They auto include cycle. Black for the instant. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. As an initial cost to cast this, you either behold a dragon or it costs one on a black.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's on mine.
The card's an excellent removal spell. Next up, I've got Worthy Cost, which is black for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast it, you sacrifice a creature, exile target creature, or planeswalker.
Yeah, that did not make my notable commons list. It made my list of sleeper commons. I think largely because it feels more... I guess it plays well with Endure as well, but I think it plays way better with Mobilize than Endure.
I agree. I think it plays way better with Mobilize than Endure, but I also think black's set up to just, like, there are a lot of black cards that work well with Worthy Cost.
Yes.
And I think exiling is going to be big game. Like, cards like this, when they're supported, are excellent. Like, we've seen that. It was two sets ago. What was it? What format was it where there was the single
Final
black?
Vengeance and Duskmourn.
Yeah, Final Vengeance and Duskmourn was outstanding because it was very well supported there. I think this card is similarly well supported here. I think this is going to be black's best removal spell.
Over Caustic Exhale?
Over Caustic Exhale is tough. Probably not over Caustic Exhale, but I think they are very close. It wouldn't shock me if you told me at the end of the format that Worthy Cost was better than Caustic Exhale.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly on my list, I've got Nightblade Brigade. Tune a black for a 1/3 death touch with mobilize one. And when enters, you surveil one. That card just does a million different things for you.
Yeah. I mean, so cards that, that didn't make either of our lists that I like. I like Unburied Earth Carver, the one in a black 2/2, pay 2, sack another creature, put a counter on this creature. I like Kintree Nurturer, 2 in a black 2 on lifelink with Endure 1.
I like black, that card also, yeah.
I think Black's out a lot. I'm just a sucker, a sheeple. I like your take about Dragon's Prey. I did put it on my list. The 2 in a black removal spell costs 2 more if it's targeting a dragon. But I could see that being worse than Worthy Cost is kind of a tough sell to me, but I could see it.
I just think, I think so much of what you're going to need to kill are dragons. And that costing 5 to kill, it's like giving all your opponents dragons ward 2.
Yeah.
That's not a great look for a removal spell versus 1 mana. Mm-hmm. And sacrificing something that you presumably are fine sacrificing in a mobilized token. I think valuing drafting your black decks in such a way, or drafting your white-black decks in such a way, or I guess mobilized decks, whatever colors you perceive to be your base colors in a mobilized deck, drafting that in such a way that Worthy Cost is your best removal spell, so that then there's the tension of your opponent has of do I block the thing to try to get the thing dead, and then maybe they've got a combat trick to kill my good creature anyway. Putting your opponent in that spot of how do I block and what do I block, I think is going to be really good. And I think Worthy Cost is going to set you up to do that.
There is also a black common that we have to talk about, because it's perhaps my hottest take of the episode, which is Adorned Crocodile. So this is 4 and a black for a 5/3. When this creature dies, create a 2/2 black zombie druid creature token, and you can pay black for renew to exile it from your graveyard to put a ++1 counter on target creature at sorcery speed. This is on my list of notable commons. I think this is my early award for Imperial Oath Award winner for clunky looking overperformer. This is, you're going to cackle at me hard. This is Thragtusk without gain 5. This is 5/3 and it dies into a 3/3. Yeah, you got to do a little work. You got to pay black to put a counter on your 2/2, but it is literally a 5/3 for 5 mana that dies into 3/3 worth of power and toughness. It's just going to be keyword bad that is a 2-for-1. I think this card is going to play really well.
I don't think it's possible for me to disagree more. Thragtusk was good in 2010, and this doesn't gain you 5. I can't imagine spending, there's so many removal spells that snap this off for 2 mana or whatever, or lock it down without it dying, or imagine this card getting Worthy Costed. It's laughably bad, I think, to cast this card. The only way I like this card is self-milling it, and then you're trying to get it out of the graveyard. But I think, it makes sense that you like it to me if you like the body, but it's so hard for me to imagine wanting to ever cast this for 5 mana.
Okay.
All right, black uncommons. Number one, card we already talked about earlier in the episode, Yathan Tomb Guard.
Number one.
I have blacks. All my black uncommons care about counters. I think that's what black does best. You mentioned earlier, black's uncommons. I agree. They were all kind of mediocre. So at least plant my flag that it's going to do counters well. So 2 and a black for an uncommon, 2/3 menace. Whenever a creature you control with a counter on it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card and lose a life.
Yeah, I like that card a lot. It is my number 3.
Number 2, I've got, that's not true. I initially had them as all 3 counters. I forgot I switched my number 2 to this card because I ultimately decided it was too good to leave off. Venerated Storm Singer, 3 and a black for a 3/3 with mobilize 1. Whenever this creature or another creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life.
I love this card, and I did end up leaving it off because I was just worried about it being a little too niche or small ball. I feel like you and I are both attracted to aristocratic kind of cards like this. Is this good enough?
Well, so here's what I kept picturing. When I was going through, and I don't remember what card I had in place of this, and I kept coming back to this card. I'm not attracted to this as a card I want to play with personally. Hmm. When I was reading through the black uncommons, but I was trying to picture how I'm going to feel when my opponent is black, white base and they curve out with some mobilized stuff and then they play this on 4. There's going to be 4 or 5 creatures swinging at you. Maybe that's an exaggeration. three or four creatures swinging at you. But also if this comes down later in the game, there's going to be times when this comes down, you feel fine. and this comes down and you're like, I guess I'm dead. Like,
yeah,
if you're like, because you're going to be trying to stabilize against a mobilized deck, right? And presumably you're going to have stabilized at some point. And I think this just throws the stabilization clock completely out the window. I think this card's going to slam the door shut when you have gone wide. Yeah. And I think that's why I ultimately included it. Because I think when my opponents play this card, or me, if I like buy into this style of deck, I think it's going to feel really bad when it hits the battlefield.
Yeah, I buy it.
And lastly, I've got 100 Battle Veteran. So 3 and black for a 4-2. As long as there are 3 or more different kinds of counters among creatures you control, this creature gets +2/+4. And you can cast this card from your graveyard. If you do, it enters with a finality counter on it.
This is interesting. So I think there's a lot of similarities between this and my beloved Crocodile. But you okay. don't like the Crocodile, and I don't particularly like this card. I'm not excited to spend the 4 mana twice.
But what if you self-mill this? Like, you're going to be self-milling in this color.
Is there that much self-mill?
There's a fair amount. There's not that much. I do
there's
agree
not
with that.
That
there's
much.
There's less than you would want. That could have been a format take, yeah. Less than you would want. I do agree. But there's also the blue draw spells that are going to let you draw 3, pitch 1. Like, maybe you're running that, and you can pitch this. I agree that I am significantly less excited about, much like the Crocodile, I'm not as excited about casting this up front. I'm more excited about casting it out of the graveyard.
Yeah, I guess I just, yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of the
ways.
Also,
if it's a 6-6, like, that's tough to do without the finality counter. It's really tough to do without the finality counter. But if it is up front, oof, can you imagine?
I can, yeah. If you get to just straight up cast it and it's a 6-6, but that is really hard. You need +1/+1 counters and then the like multiple cards.
There's some surveil stuff too. I agree. Like 4 mana 4/2 up front, tough. I was picturing self-milling this, getting value out of the graveyard.
I was trying to come. I mean, again, we're just doing our best to compare to cards from other formats. But the 4/3 from Aetherdrift that, like, yeah, you had to pay 2 life and sack a thing.
And
that
sack
was
a thing.
There's a way bigger setup cost for that. But that card was nothing in my mind. I felt like that card was a D. It just didn't matter. And that's sort of what I feel about this, but maybe you have to do some, if you do some deck building stuff, if you get probably have to pair it with blue to get the self mill from the Organ Hoarder or the what you're talking about, the like draw, discard life.
But like, I'm of two minds about it. Like, now that you're talking me through it, I could see, like, I can't imagine ending my draft and being like, well, my deck doesn't work. I didn't get 100 Battle Veteran. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I feel that way about it. Like, I definitely see that side of the card. But also, I can see, like, games where, like, you spend the 4 mana and play this as a 4-2, and your opponent's plan is to attack on the ground, and you're going to 2-for-1 them with this card. Like,
right.
It's kind of slow and clunky. It's not a very good offensive card at all, but I think it is good at gumming up the works.
Yeah, for sure. Well, much like an adorned crocodile. I have a couple cards you didn't include, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts on these. My number one black uncommon is Gurmag Rakshasa. 4 black for a 5/5 demon with menace. When it enters, target creature an opponent controls gets -2/-2 until end of turn, and target creature you control gets +2/+2 until end of turn.
I ultimately landed on that being too expensive for not, like, I don't think it's going to reliably be able to kill something you care about.
That matters.
Is where I ended on it. If it does, it's certainly going to be great. Like, I just, that was where I landed on it.
And my number two is removal spell, Salt Road Skirmish. 3 and a black for a sorcery. Destroy a creature. Make 2/1/1 red warrior creature tokens. They gain haste until end of turn. Sack them at the beginning of the next end step.
I do like that card. I think it's going to be good. But like you said, you were just like, you're trying to decide between a bunch of cards that are like either C pluses or B minuses.
I mean, a lot of the power outliers feel like they exist with the multicolor cards, which we'll get to at the end of this conversation.
Yeah.
Takes us on to red. Again, I say likely best as removal support. Too many of the cards are caught up in the flurry mechanic to feel great. If red is your primary color, it'll be best as aggro mobilize paired with white. But red is the color I'm least excited about.
I agree. Red's also the color I'm least excited about. Its commons and uncommons seem underpowered and or more specific than a lot of the commons of the rest of the colors. I think it's much more of a complementary color than a base color. Like, I think you're going to be in trouble if red is your primary color in the format. I think it complements blue really well in Jeskai. I think it complements white really well in Mardu. And like if Jeskai white red base aggro ends up being good, like I'm a little higher on red if that's true. I just don't believe in that archetype that much. And then I think you're probably only in the teamer life playing it for gold cards. Like I think you're just playing blue and green cards and then the teamer gold cards. Like I don't think you're playing a lot of red single colored commons or uncommons in a teamer mm-hmm. deck, maybe with the exception of the Exhale or something.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so commons. I've got Molten Exhale, which is one in a red for sorcery, deals four to a creature or planeswalker. If you behold a dragon, you can play it at instant speed. That card seems absurd. Mm-hmm. Especially because a lot of the dragons are like 4/4 flyers or whatever, you know?
Yep. Yeah, Molten Exhale is also on my list.
And then the other card is Shock Brigade, one in a red for a 1/3 with menace, and it's got mobilize 1.
Yeah, I left that off my list, but that is the other red common that I really like.
Yeah, that seems... It's going to be annoying. Much like the in MH3, yes, like the smelted charge bug. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Shock Brigade is going to be... Like, your opponent's going to play that on 2 on the play. It's just going to... First of all, pressure you really well, but then also open up so many synergy options for them.
And which of Red's highly medium uncommons did you choose for your list?
Yeah, holy cow. Channel Dragonfire is about the only good one. That's my number one. It's red for a sorcery, deals 2 to any target. It's got Harmonize for 5 red, red. And then in the number 2 slot, I've got Sunset Strike Master. One in a red for a 3/1, taps to add a red. And you can pay 2 in a red, tap it, sacrifice it to deal 6 to a creature with flying. In the hopes that like this does, it's got a lot of stuff on it. I hope that some of it pans out to be good or worthy of a card. Like that this mm-hmm. ramping you and then turning into a removal spell later can make it a good card. And then in the number 3 slot, I've got Equilibrium Adept, 3 in a red for a 2/4 uncommon. When it enters, exile the top card of your library. Till the end of your next turn, you can play that card. And it's got Flurry. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, this creature gains double strike until end of turn.
I have the same 3 cards. I swapped number 2 and number 3, but could put them in any order, really.
But those aren't great.
No.
And I think both of Red's commons are better than all 3 of those cards.
I think maybe
Channel Dragonfire is better than Shock Brigade, but I think you're taking Molten Exhale over Channel Dragonfire, right?
Yeah, I think so.
The deal 4?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you taking Shock Brigade over Channel Dragonfire?
It depends how good Shock is. Like, if Shock is good,
yeah.
No, but if Shock is kind of whatever, like if we're in Grim Bauble territory, then no, I'm not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, it's not a great look for Red.
It's not great, right? You're like, well, Red's good as a support color. And you're like, and how is it being supportive? Like, I guess we should shout out the red removal spell, Narset's Rebuke. The 4 and a red deal 5 that then adds Jeskai. Does help you double spell if you're caring about that. It's just like, if you do get to use that 3 mana, it's good. Another card I want to talk to you about, the Iridescent Tiger, which is another like double spell-y card. That's the uncommon 4 and a red for a 3/4. When it enters, if you cast it, you add Wooburg. Mm-hmm. Like, I like both of those cards. I think those are 2 good cards because you get to like, whatever, if you use that mana, you're getting a pretty significant whatever tempo. I don't know. You're just getting a really good discount. Like if you Iridescent Tiger and then play another 5 drop, that's pretty crazy.
I agree, but that feels like saying that in Vintage Cube, like I'm less jazzed about the Tiger. That feels like in Vintage Cube saying that like, well, when you draw Mox on curve and you get to play your 3 drop, like it's awesome. But when you draw your Mox when it's a land, it's nothing, right? No power level. You know what I mean? Like
you're comparing Iridescent Tiger to Mox?
Well, but like in the draws, so like, yes, in the draws where you get to go 5 drop into 5 drop, Tiger's going to look good. But at what cost? Like in the draws where that doesn't happen, you're putting a 5 mana 3/4 in your deck.
So you shouldn't put Mox in your deck. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Don't put Mox in your Vintage.
Don't put Mox in your deck. Yeah, you nailed it. That's my takeaway. So I'm not particularly jazzed about the Tiger. Yeah. I do really like Narset's Rebuke. But again, it's so specific. Like power level's there. Like 5 mana instant, deal 5. And it exiles the creature that would die. Also, like I love Narset's Rebuke in this blue-red instant speed control deck or the Jeskai control life. I think that card's going to be outstanding there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All right, you ready to talk about how much you hate green?
No, I'm not. I like green in this format.
Me either. I like green a lot in this format. It was, do you have a favorite color? of the five right now? Do you have a top color?
I do, but it's not okay. What I actually think is the best. Like, I really want to draft blue.
I know you do. Okay. maybe we'll get to that when we get to some takeaways. Let's talk about green.
Okay, so green, I think, is by far the most versatile color in the format. I think it is the best at fitting well and maybe even being the base color in all three of its clans, which I don't think any of the other colors can come close to saying. And I think all of that also points towards green being a base color for multicolor soup. Like if you want to do the 4 or 5 color life, green's going to be awesome there because it's so good as a base color in all of its clans. It's naturally going to put all of the cards from its clans well together. I'm really excited about green as a base color. I think it does a lot of what you want in the format.
I said I think green has a ton of just great rate plus synergy going on. Renew, playing with counters and graveyard matters attached to good keywords and raw stats makes this a great color to get deep into. Happy to pair it with blue or black to find the right clan. Plus, it also gets good removal. Like, it's just like check, 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 check.
This is going to be the time that green's terrible. We're going to have to come out and say in week 2 that green's bad. We were wrong,
green's
folks.
Green's bad and Boros and is and the best.
And we're never going to say that green is good ever again.
Yeah.
But I like cautiously optimistic about green. Like I do like it.
And this was another color that I felt like I could put 4 of its commons on my top notable commons list. I ended up with only 2, but I feel like there's a lot that green is offering that I like.
I agree. I also ended up with only 2.
My 2 are Einok Wayfarer. This is the 1 and a green 1/1. When it enters, you mill 3 and you can put a land from among them into your hand. If you don't, you put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. And then I have Sagu Pummeler, which is 3 and a green for a 4/4 reach. And it has renew for 4 and a green. Exile this from your yard, put 2 counters and a reach counter on target creature as a sorcery.
Yeah, that card's really good. Similar to white, I think green is also really deep at common.
Yes.
I didn't put that in my list or my sleeper list, but some of that was because I was feeling self-conscious about how long my lists were at this point.
Yeah.
But I agree. I really like that card. I have the Einok Wayfarer in my list. I think it's the best green common. The other one I have in my list, I'm surprised is not in your list, is the Segu Wildling. The 4 and a green 3/3 flyer, ETBs you gain 3, and then you can Roost Seek as an omen for a single green to search your library for basic land card, reveal it, put into your hand, and then shuffle.
Yeah, I like that card a lot, and my notable commons list is already 12 long, so it could have been, but it could have been 16, which I think is good, and again, underlines your point earlier about commons are back in this format.
Yes. Okay, so green uncommons. My number one is the Traveling Botanist we talked about earlier, the 1 and a green 2/3. When it becomes tapped, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you can reveal it, put it in your hand. If you don't put the card in your hand, you can put it into your graveyard. I think this is just a good card, but also is going to play really well with Harmonize. That's going to be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're going to be able to tap it as your Harmonized creature later in the game after the body gets outclassed, that sort of stuff. And then it's still going to trigger. I really like Traveling Botanist. Next, I've got Synchronized Charge. This is Travel Prep, baby. 1 and a green for a sorcery. Distribute 2 +1/+1 counters among 1 or 2 target creatures you control. Creatures you control with counters on them gain Vigilance and Trample until end of turn. And it's got Harmonized for 4 and a green.
I had not thought about Travel Prep. That is a good comparison. I like that take.
But better Travel Prep. Vigilance and Trample. Whew.
Vigilance and Trample. Yeah. And it helps to reduce the Harmonized cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see it. I did not see it before. I see it now. Okay. I'm into it.
And number 3, I put Knockout Maneuver. This is 2 and a green for a sorcery. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature control. Then it deals damage equal to its power to target creature and opponent controls.
Yeah. I have the Botanist at number 3. I have Knockout Maneuver at number 2. And I have perhaps, maybe this is my hottest take, even hotter than the Crocodile. I recognize this is not actually true, but I wanted a chance to talk about my number 1 is Encroaching Dragonstorm, which is the 3 and a green enchantment.
Ooh.
When it enters, you grab 2 basics, put them into play tapped, and then whenever you cast a dragon, or whenever a dragon enters, you get to pick it up. Do I think this is better than some of these other uncommons that ask less of you and affect the board? No. Do I think this is one of, if not the best ways to like draft oops all good cards that no one else wants? Yes. Like, I think this is, if you want to like that Cons of Tarkir strategy you were talking about last week, where you're like, you can just grab the fixing in pack 1 and then just like draft all the good cards in pack 2 and pack 3. this is drafting the fixing in pack one. And then plus the fact that this ramps you to the dragons, and then you cast the dragons, and then you get to do this more. Like, I think this card, it's not quite the MH3 card, but it's a little bit. Like, remember, it was like Path of something. It's like three and a green. Path of Annihilation. Yeah. It was three and a green enchantment, made two Eldrazi spawn, and whenever you cast a thing with MV7, did you gain four, right?
Something. It was ridiculous.
It's not quite that, but I do think it's similar, and I think it's going to be a real key for the five-color decks in the format.
Okay, I want to throw this by you, because I like that card also. The reason I left it off is because I was like, how often are you going to cast this multiple times? And like, if you do, you're already winning so hard. How do you think this stacks up versus Roamer's Routine, which is the green common? It's two and a green, search your library for basic, put it on the play tapped, then shuffle, and it's got Harmonize for four and a green. Like, do you think it's substantially better than that for the deck?
I do, because I guess the reason I'm thinking it's substantially better is because I think it's more important for those kinds of decks to affect the board on turn two or turn three. And then, like, once you've done that, the jump from like four to seven potentially.
Yeah. You're stable. You play this and then you land a Haymaker.
Really, like, yeah. Versus the jump from I took turn three off and now I'm casting a five drop on turn four. It's just less explosive, I think. And it double fixes you immediately.
Double fixing is great. Yeah, that's big game. But I also can see Roamer's Routine doing that. Like, there's a world where I think Roamer's Routine can go, like, you play your two drop or whatever. You play Roamer's Routine on three. Then you play a dragon on four. Because there's a lot of the dragons are like five
mana.
Like, yeah. five mana with three of a clan or whatever. You do that. And then the following turn, it's tough sell, like tapping your blocker, though, to harmonize. I agree. The other card is better than Roamer's Routine. I'm just like a little skeptical of casting it multiple times in a game, but maybe you don't need to. You know what I mean? And if you are, great. You're having a blast casting it multiple times in a game. So I do. Right. I do like that deck, and I think that card's going to be great for a multicolor green deck.
The last card that made my notable commons list before we get on to maybe sleeper commons or multicolor cards we want to chat about is Evolving Wilds. I think Evolving Wilds is going to be really important in this format.
It's going to be great. Well, and I didn't even put lands on my list because I was running out of room, and I just know the lands are great. But like those, and we should shout out the gain lands are also going to be great. The enemy colored gain lands are better than the allied color gain lands. And you can, another thing that happens in a three color format is that you can kind of peg, like, if you know you're Jeskai, and you kind of feel out that, like, you might be the only Jeskai drafter. Like, you can try to float those allied blue-white duels or things like that. Like, putting yourself in a spot where you can reliably get the allied colored duels that are quote-unquote bad later is also really beneficial in the format. So, yeah, Evolving Wilds, great. Gain lands, great. Like, what the interesting thing that I think we should chat about is, where do you expect to pick them in relation to the best commons? Because there's so many good commons, too. Like, your pack one, pick one in Exhales over the gain lands, right?
Yeah, I think, like, just below some of
the list of commons that matter.
But, like, and I'm thinking specifically Evolving Wilds. The gain lands, I think they're definitely below. But specifically Evolving Wilds, I do think, like,
because it's a tri-land at common?
Yeah, because it's a tri-land at common and delays the decision, which I am valuing, as we'll see when we get to how highly I'm rating some of the hybrid cards in my clan uncommons lists, that, like, I'm just valuing delaying the decision in this format as much as possible, and I like that Evolving Wilds lets me do that.
Yeah, I'm here for that take. Evolving Wilds looks great. All right, sleeper commons?
Sleeper commons, go for it.
Unending Whisper. Blue for the sorcery, draw card, harmonize five and a blue.
I don't like this card. This looks like bad fodder for the double spell deck to me.
But it's so inoffensive to include. Like, you'll be able to, like, if you get a double spell trigger out of this, great. If you don't, fine. And then later in the game, like, the board stalls out, maybe you can get another card or you mill this. Like, this card just
says
value
mill.
To me.
There's one mill card.
I agree, I keep wanting there to be more mill than there is. I agree.
Okay,
or you cast it and you harmonize it later.
It's think twice, I guess. Like, but quite clunky and not an instant.
But it's one mana, like up front. You know what I mean? That's why I like it.
You're saying one mana, like it's like nothing to include, and then I'm like, great, then I'm not going to include it in my deck. You know?
But with the upside of if you get to a point in the game, like. And I don't think you're going to be able to aggressively flash it back, but let's say 50% of games, you get to harmonize it. That's a great card to include at little to no cost to your deck.
Yeah, maybe.
Plus
maybe.
Triggering leaves the graveyard synergies in blue-green.
I'm terrible at evaluating blue cards, so I'll defer to you, but I don't love this card.
I like it. The Devotee cycle, I think.
So you're higher on this cycle than last week.
I think so.
You like the one in a blue 3/3 defender?
No, I hate that one. I hate that one on the white one, but the other three, the ones that are real cards, I think I like.
Yeah. The black one, that was another card that could have made my notable commons list, honestly. The two-one.
The black card is so good. The durable coil bug, the one that you can get back out of the graveyard. I think it's really going to be important to cast your gold cards on time, because the gold cards look broken compared to the uncommons. Mm-hmm. And I think those devotees... Yeah. Giving you an additionally higher chance to curve out well is good. Like, I don't anticipate, like I said, I don't like the blue one or the white one. But the other three, I like those as reasonable enough creatures and then, like, bumping my chance up to get a play a game out on curve while also not relying on them for fixing. Like, I want to have drafted a good mana base outside of those. But then just having those in the deck, I think, is going to be nice.
Though maybe the blue one is good in this Jeskai control deck we're talking about. Like, I don't hate it.
I have made a promise to myself after what was this most recent format called?
Aether Drift.
Thank you. After Aether Drift, the stupid one in a blue 3/3 vehicle that like turns itself on your opponent's turn.
Horrible.
It's so mopey. And it always is. Like, it always is. Every time I'm like, maybe this card's good this time. And, you know, roadblock, defender. I'm out. Okay. Stupid blue 3/3 that can't attack. I'm out on it as a default going forward. And it's going to happen. I'm taking my Marshall Sutcliffe stance. Somebody's going to have to prove it to me before I start putting that card in my deck.
That's fair. I like that.
I think the devotees could get there. Rescue Leopard. Is 2 and a red for a 4/2. When it becomes tapped, you can discard a card if you do draw a card. I really like that as it plays with Harmonize. I think that could be a sneaky good Harmonize enabler. Narset's Rebuke on the list. We already chatted about that quite a bit, but I love Narset's Rebuke in the Jeskai control life. That's the 5 mana deal 5 and then floats you back Jeskai mana. Champion of Dusan. This is 2 and a green for a 4/2 at common with Trample. It's renew 1 and a green, exile from your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter and a Trample counter on target creature. Activate only as a sorcery. There's several rares that care about different kinds of counters, I think. And like, so these things that renew and put two counters on something, pretty cool. And again, like, plays well in the ferocious space. Like, just a fine card. And this is what, like, green 7th or 8th best common or something ridiculous, you know? And then Trade Route Envoy. Speaking of more green cards, I want to chat with you about this card. Three and a green for a 4/3. When it enters, draw a card if you control a creature with a counter on it. If you didn't draw a card this way, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. This card, like, could also be great, right? Like, if you love the camel, like the white 4/3, like, I think this is almost a better version of the camel. Like, they're different in different ways, but I think they're similarly powered cards.
I mean, these aren't even I feel like a lot of these cards are like, these aren't sleeper commons. They're just like, we should have made the 10 notable commons list 20 notable commons.
They're so deep.
Right? Yeah. I like that card a lot too.
You're fine with a 4 mana 5/4, but presumably if you draft your deck well, like if you're including this, it should be a 4 mana 4/3 draw card most of the time, which is great.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
If you build your that's so funny. Like, there's some cognitive dissonance here, sir, where you're like, if you build your deck correctly, this is a 4 mana 4/3. The same is true for Salt Road Pack Beast.
So much more can go wrong with Salt Road Pack Beast, though, because the fail case is it costing 6 mana versus this card's fail case is a four mana five four.
That's true. Yes, the floor is lower for sure.
Yes, and the ceiling is higher on the camel, like your white card.
My white card, the ceiling's higher. Yes, for sure.
Pack Beast. I'm calling it a camel. It's a camel, right?
It is a camel. You're not wrong. Actually, no, it's just a beast. It's just a creature beast. It's just a
definitely
beast.
A camel in the art, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Snakeskin Veil is my last one because I'm just obsessed with this card. Green instant, +1/+1 counter and hexproof on a creature you control.
We have like almost no overlap on our sleeper commons, I think.
Like you have a what? Oh, you have different ones?
Yeah.
Which is a nod to how good the commons are.
Yeah. I put Bearer of Glory on my list. This is 1 and a white for a 2/1. During this your turn, this creature has first strike and you can pay 4 and a white to give creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. I think that card looks good to me. I think the white Omen Dragon is a really nice split card. Riling Dawnbreaker. It's 4 and a white for a 3/4 with flying and vigilance. At the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And the Omen is just a 2-mana 2/2.
Yeah, I really like that card as well.
Great little split card. I'm a sucker for a value 2-drop in blue. Agent of Codice, 1 and a blue, 2/1 with renew, 3 and a blue, exile it from your yard to put 2 counters on a creature.
I'm less jazzed about that one.
Yeah, I know, because you hate playing to the board in blue, but I don't. another blue common that we haven't talked about that I'm curious if you think this is going to play well in this format is Humbling Elder. Single blue, 1/2 with flash. When it enters, target creature and opponent controls gets -2/-0 until end of turn. This is often a pretty big overperformer in a lot of formats.
I'm kind of loving blue-white tempo. The more that we've floated that, more we've floated that idea. I think that card could be outstanding there.
Mm-hmm.
Other blue decks, like presumably that's good in Jeskai, but then like, what are you doing with the body afterwards? Like, it really wants to be paired like with black cards to sacrifice the body. Yeah,
I mean, if this eats a 2/1, like it's in, like you don't need to do anything with the body.
That's fair, but presumably for this card to be good, also, you have to be able to.
But renew counters gives you something to do with the body later on in the game. Turn it into a 3/4.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I felt like it was the reason I didn't include it anywhere is because I felt like it was a bit homeless. If there's a home for it, card's going to be good.
Yeah. Snowmelt Stag. I think this card is like legit the truth. Maybe this is Imperial Othi too. But that's the 3/3 and a blue, 2/5 Vigi during your turn. It's a 5/2. And you can pay 5 blue-blue to have it not be blocked this turn. I put Worthy Cost on my notable my sleeper commons list. It's on your notable commons list. That's the edict, like sack a thing, kill a thing. And then I've got Embermouth Sentinel on my list as well. 2 mana for a 2/1 when it enters. You may search your library for a basic, reveal it, shuffle, put that card on top. And if you control a dragon, put that card onto the battlefield tapped instead. I think a fixer for any of your 3 colors, any of your potential 4 colors. It's colorless, delays the decision. You got to affect the board early. I think this card is going to be good.
But that's worse than the devotees that are good, right?
It depends, because one of the things I don't like about the devotees
is they don't help you hit land drops.
Well, they don't help you hit land drops, and you can't trade them off. Like, if you've got Death Touch one in green and you're like, well, I really want to cast, I got to be able to cast my mana thing. And you're like, well, you can't engage your thing in combat. Like Embermouth Sentinel is just like, chuck it in front of whatever sure. and you get your land. That's why I hear what you're saying about the devotees, but I just know I'm going to picture these spots where, and I think the reverse is going to be true. Like you might want to aggressively attack into your opponent's devotees as well. Because they might be like, I actually can't trade this off. I need this in a couple turns. So I don't know.
That's fair. I like Embermouth Sentinel.
All right. Shall we get to some multicolor cards where the power is?
Please. Let's do.
Okay. We'll start with some enemy colored cards to shout out. And then some clan uncommons and round things out with some takeaways. So each enemy color pair has 3 uncommons. 2 uncommons and a Storm Brood Dragon, which we counted as enemy colored uncommons. I'll work top down. My number one, Kishla Skimmer. Still love this card. Green blue for a 2/2 flyer. Whenever a card leaves your graveyard during your turn, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. I think this will be harder to trigger than perhaps the comparison of what was the 2-drop from Murders at Karloff Manor?
Oblivious Bookworm?
The Collect Evidence 4. Well, Oblivious Bookworm is, I think, just better than this.
Yeah.
Straight up. But anyway, I think comes in a nice long line of value green blue 2-drops, but I think it'll be not like it's not going to be drawing you a card every turn, I don't think.
I agree with that assessment. Yep.
And then I went hard on Stormbroods because I think these are high picks because of how flexible they are.
Ooh, okay.
So I've got Disruptive Stormbrood, 4 and a green 3/3 flyer. When it enters, destroy an artifact or enchantment. And then it has Petty Revenge as 1 and a black for an omen. Destroy target creature with power 3 or less. I have Twin Maw Stormbrood, 5 and a white for a 5/4 flyer. When this enters, you gain 5 life. And Charring Bite is 1 and a red for an omen. Deal 5 to target creature without flying. And Purging Stormbrood, 4 and a black for a 4/4 flyer. Ward, pay 2 life. When this enters, remove all counters from up to 1 target creature. And the omen is Absorb Essence, 1 and a white. Target creature gets +2/+2 and gains lifelink and hexproof until end of turn. And then I rounded things out with Hardened Tactician, 1 white/black for a 2/4 human warrior. Pay 1, sack a token, draw a card.
Yeah, we're very similar on our enemy multicolor uncommons. I've got Skimmer and 2 of the Stormbroods that you had. Twin Maw Stormbrood and Disruptive Stormbrood, which is the red-white split and the black-green
split. The 2 that
split.
Are removal spells as their omens.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are on my list. I left off the other one. Mm-hmm. But my Stormbroods are 4 and 5. I also have Hardened Tactician on my list, which is the 2/4 sack a thing, draw a card. I have that at number 2. That card looks outstanding to me and very well supported. And then my last one here in the number 3 slot is a card I want to champion. This is Glacial Dragon Hunt, blue red for a sorcery at uncommon, draw a card, then discard a card. Whenever you discard a non-land card this way, it deals 3 damage to target creature, and it's got Harmonize for 4 blue red.
Talk to me.
This card is, I think, very good. Is also going to play great with other cards with Harmonize. So, like, you're saying, well, there's no self-mill. Quit saying self-mill. I agree. There's not nearly as much self-mill as I would like. This is a way to get cards in the graveyard that you want in the graveyard while also turning them into a lightning bolt up front, which is pretty darn nice. I love the Jeskai control life, and I think this card's going to be outstanding. The only thing is it's sorcery. It's not instant. I wish it were an instant, but I think this being a 2-for-1 lightning bolt twice is good.
It's not a 2-for-1.
It's not like a 2-for-1. 2-for-1 in that, like, when you cast it up front and harmonize it, like, it will have been a 2-for-1 by the time you harmonize it. Giving you some selection, I like this card. Maybe I'm a little too high on it. I think I'm high on it given your point of how powerful and flexible the Stormbroods are. Like, this should be a Stormbrood probably in my list.
I think so. Like, I think you just want to be, I mean, we'll see when we get to.
I just want to be Jeskai. Like, that's why this is.
You shouldn't be, though. You should not be putting red cards in your top. Like,
that's fair. I agree.
This should be a red card should not be in your
top. I agree. Do as Ethan says, not as I say. I agree. Okay. This should be a Stormbrood.
Okay.
Right, we should have been 5 for 5 on our top enemy.
I mean, I don't know. The it's a bit of a stretch. The black Stormbrood, the 4/4 with the combat
trick. I don't
think
it's that big of a stretch. I almost put that in place of these other two. Like, it was close for me deciding between them.
All right, what's going on with your multicolor cards?
All right, for multicolor clan cards, number 1, I've got Lion Wait, which is Sultai for a sorcery uncommon. Return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Lion Wait deals damage equal to that card's power to target creature.
Love that card.
I am maybe slightly lower on that, given how much we've talked about. Well, there isn't really that much self-mill. Mm-hmm. That worries me a little bit about that card. Like, that enabling it might be harder than I think.
Well, what's nice about it is it's a 3-color card, but it's when you're fine. Like, you cast it on turn 7 is when it's going to be better. Like, you're not casting it on turn 3, so it's nice. It feels a lot more or a lot less mana intensive than it might seem.
Number 2, I've got Karakyuk Guardian, which is 3-teamer for a 6/5 flying vigilance trample, has hexproof, it hasn't been dealt damage yet, ridiculously powerful. Mm-hmm. Number 3, I've got Mammoth Bellow, 2 and Jeskai for a sorcery, make a 5/5 elephant, and it's got Harmonize for 5 and teamer. In the number 4 slot, got Dragonclaw Strike, which is 2-brid plus teamer, sorcery uncommon, double the power and toughness of target creature you control until end of turn. Fights up to 1 target creature an opponent controls. So also just want to shout that all 3 of the teamer cards are in my top clan uncommons. Mm-hmm. And then in the number 5 slot, there were a bunch of cards you could have put here. I ended up settling on Kintree Severance as a 2-brid Abzan card. It's an instant sorcery. Not a sorcery. It's an instant uncommon. Exile target permanent with mana value 3 or greater.
That's actually my number 1.
Woo!
And I honestly really, like, I struggled because what I I really wanted to do was mostly put two Brid cards on this list, because that's how I anticipate drafting the format. Like, I think Lion Weight is really powerful. I don't think I'm taking Lion Weight. And how I'm thinking about these lists is pick orders, tier lists, pack one, pick ones. I don't think I'm taking Lion Weight, pack one, pick one, basically ever. I just don't want to. That is not how I want to draft this format. And maybe Lion Weight is enough of a power outlier that I should be. But like, I think it's got to either be like true busto busto bombs, or I want to go inside out, as you said.
I agree. How do you feel about this statement that, you know, we're gonna get data? I think ultimately the best uncommon data wise are going to be some of the clan cards. Like, yes. Not the two Brid cards. Like,
correct.
I agree the two Brid cards give you more flexibility, but at the cost of a hit in power, the true clan cards are more powerful. That those are going to rise to the top of the data. And the ones that are at the top, you're going to be willing to, and maybe it's not Lion Weight, but whichever the best end up being, those are probably going to be cards you're willing to pack one, pick one.
I agree. I agree tentatively.
Yeah.
With that.
So, and maybe not. Like, maybe that's the thing I'm excited for about this format, is it looks like it's going to give you a lot of opportunity to leverage draft skill. Like, I think I'm really looking forward to that.
And I think we're going to see people approaching the format drastically differently. Like, yes. In terms of what your preferences are, what you think is open, if you are prioritizing taking lands higher than other folks, like, it's going to take a while for pick orders to coalesce, if they do at all. A couple cards that didn't make your list that I want to shout out on my list are a couple Mardu cards. Sonic Shrieker, 2 red, white, black for a 4/4 flyer. When it enters, it deals 2 to any target and you gain 2 life. If a player is dealt damage this way, they discard a card. And another 2 Brid, the Mardu one, which we talked about at the beginning of the episode, Defibrillating Current. Deal 4 to a creature or planeswalker and you gain 2 life. Again, I don't think this is more powerful than some of the cards that Ben shouted out, but in terms of what it allows me to do in the draft, I'm going to be taking this highly.
Yeah, it's whether you're valuing power up front in a card versus power in the draft.
Mm-hmm. And I'm currently going to be, because I think this format is really powerful, that I am valuing flexibility in the draft as a way to leverage power later on versus taking power early and then supporting that power.
I like that thought. Yeah.
Are there any other cards that you haven't gotten a chance to talk about, or should we move into some takeaways?
I think I'm good as far as the individual cards go.
Great. Well, I'll go first and then I'll let you close it out. And I'll say that I think my 3 takeaways are: approach drafts with an inside out mentality. Truly said the exact same thing you did. Find a color, an enemy color that pairs with that color, and a clan color on the outside, not the other way around. Number 2, draft fundamentals are even more important in a 3-color format. Deck functionality will rely on reading signals, having a good curve, and a good mana base. And lastly, Abzan colors, and black-white and black-green specifically as enemy color pairs, are your best places to start.
I think maybe I agree with you more about Abzan than I thought I did the first time around. We'll get into my takeaways. So my first one is to hammer home, make sure you can cast your cards on time. I put good mana base and draft fundamentals. So talking about similar things, but just like, you got to draft a good deck. You got to draft the mana to support your deck. You got to make sacrifices in power to make sure that you're going to be able to reliably cast your cards on time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think stumbling is going to be a disaster in this format. And my other one is, again, try to work from one color outwards, if possible, similar to what you were saying. But sometimes you are going to have to start 3 colors. And sure. if you do, make sure you know which color or colors are likely to be your base for the best possible deck.
Except, I do want to say an except here, because, and again, I only did 1 practice draft, but I know you love extrapolating from practice drafts.
Hell yeah, I do.
When you start, I think the drafts that are going to feel the worst are the ones where you start with 3 color cards.
Because, and you're saying, like, not 2 Brids or things like that, or not the Stormbloods, no, like, I'm saying the actual, like, clan cards.
Actual cards that cost require a mana of every color. you're just going to, you already have to do so many things when you start a draft like that, right? You have to hone in on which of the color pairs you're supposed to be in. Is this even open? I need to make sure I get fixing, blah, blah, blah. And I think you're just going to be in a way better spot. And I don't think you need to put yourself in that spot if you start, if you do the inside out thing. I know you're, I know we keep saying you're going to have to. I think that list of cards should be small that you do it for.
That's fair. And I generally, like, I think we're on the same page about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But have you seen the rares? We're getting ready to talk about the rares on Lords Unlimited. There are some banger rares and mythics, like, that you're going to be pack one, pick one-ing.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm going to do it.
I agree. The list, I think the list of cards from the uncommons should be very short. But
yeah,
there's going to be some rares and mythics. And then maybe also, like, if you start with a card like that, maybe rather than like, well, I got a tunnel, like going from 3 to 1, maybe you just go from 3 to 5. Like, if that's how your draft starts, like if you start with a great 3-color card, maybe that's the incentive you need to move into 4 and 5 color soup. Like, you try really hard to get into green and then like do that.
Maybe that's true. I guess I just want to encourage people that like the 3-color cards, the true clan cards that you're taking early, they have to be actual A's. They have to be actual bombs. I'm not talking like, oh, it's like a B+. It's good. Oh, that's some value. Great. Take a C+, 1-color card, take Evolving Wilds and figure it out later. I don't think you want to do that for B grade cards.
I agree. Yes. That should be the line. Like, they should be true bombs. So maybe I don't like Lion Weight as much as I think I do, because I don't think that's a bomb. It's like a B card.
Yeah.
But let's say that you do. Let's say you start with a Mardu Gold card. Like, I think you really don't want to follow your Mardu Gold card up with a red card. You want to follow it up with a black card or
insert
a white card.
Insert any card you don't want to follow it up with a red card. But yes,
that's what you're saying. Okay. Last takeaway here is that green and white are some of the most straightforward starting points in the format. Green for its versatility and white for its focus on aggro and playing to the board. So if you're unsure and you have a choice for where to start, I think green or white are great places to start. Personally, I'm going to be probably starting blue. Maybe not. Maybe it's just not going to be good enough. You better believe I'm going to be trying it out.
Yeah, so you start green and then you just go green, blue and do Saltire Teemer like you were saying last week.
Yeah, like I certainly am hottest on Teemer as the best clan. You're hot on Abzan for the best
clan. I think Abzan is the best clan, yeah.
I think that's probably a good shout given like what I'm talking about here. Like I didn't think I agreed as much as I do now reading my last key takeaway, which is like that's pretty close to just like start Abzan, yeah.
Right. I mean, if you're saying green and white are the best commons, the only deck you get to play both of those cards in is Abzan.
Is Abzan, yeah. So you're going to the pre-release, you're choosing Abzan?
That's what I'm going to choose. I want to win. Yeah. How about you?
Wow. I would choose Teemer, I think.
Choose Teemer. Yeah.
That's fair. Going to the pre-release.
Yeah. Well, we'll have some good opportunities this week to check in with these takeaways and format overviews and then get to come back next week and tell everybody that Boros is the best and green is terrible and start from scratch.
So we should take away, like, I felt so much better about this crash course. And like, we want to hear your opinions as well. So like, if you like this format, if you like this style, this felt great to me.
I agree. It also feels like it forced me to think really critically about a lot of the things in the format rather than just assigning grades and then coming in and being like, let's talk about these cards. Like, no, let's talk about, I mean, we always talk about that the crash course is big picture. This felt really like, here's the big picture. And I don't know, again, echo chamber, but a lot of
overlap.
We're
on the same page.
We're really on the same page. There's some hot takes there. There's some outliers. There's some pet cards. But like, we see a lot of the same matrix here.
Yes.
Which is encouraging for these takes as either being definitely right or abysmally wrong.
Either way, the listeners are going to get a good episode next week.
Exactly.
And on that note, thank you as always to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our Patreon page, our tier lists, our merch, our episode backlog, our Twitch channels, respectively, our YouTube channel. All that good stuff is on lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing. Clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.